This is the Family Culture Movement. Are you ready to break up with the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors that have been passed on to you from generations past and from our dominant culture and start parenting with intention? Then you're in the right place. The Family Culture Movement is where you'll learn how to take inventory of the narratives and social conditioning shaping your family dynamics and say no to the dominant culture. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. I'm going to help you break dysfunctional patterns and lead your family with confidence and resilience.
Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to check out the last episode of the Family Culture Movement with Jackie Bailey, where we talk about communication skills we can teach our kids so that they can use their voice to empower themselves and to be effective communicators.
Welcome to the show, Family Culture Hackers. I am joined today by Dr. Joe Martin. Dr. Martin is an award-winning speaker, author, and certified man builder who helps Christian men win at what matters and frustrates them the most as husbands, fathers, and leaders. He's authored 9 books, including Are You the Man? 201 Lessons I Wish My Dad Would Have Taught Me, and The Real Man is Spiritual Leader Blueprint. He's spoken for more than 750 organizations, churches, and universities in 4 countries. And he's a columnist for All Pro Dad, Lifeway Men, and Promise Keepers. He's also the host of Real Men Connect, a #1 top rated radio podcast on Apple Podcasts for Christian men. Welcome, Dr. Martin. Can I call you Dr. Martin?
You sure can, Jody.
Okay.
You can call me whatever you want to call me. Call me what my mama called me. No, but that's awesome. Fine. Thank you for having me on the show. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, I was super excited to have this conversation because I just, you know, I love that you're talking about empowering men. And I think that that's something that the message that needs to be shared. And so I'm excited to share that with you and be a conduit for your message on my podcast. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
So I like to ask this icebreaker question. What did you want to be when you were a kid? What did you want to be when you grew up?
I'm laughing already, Jody, because see, we're looking at each other on video, but you can't see. I'm 5'0" and 100 nothing. I wanted to be a professional basketball player. That's what I wanted to be when I was growing up. And so I'm about 1.5 feet short of meeting the height requirement. But no, that was my desire growing up as a kid, because I grew up in Miami, Florida, in an inner city ghetto. And a lot of kids think that's their way out is athletics, mm-hmm. Sports, entertainment, that kind of thing. So I was one of those that kind of fit the same mold of thinking that was going to be my ticket out, was going to be on my athletic prowess. And so that was my dream.
Were you a good player? You're good?
Oh, yeah, I was good. I was just too short. That's the problem.
Well, how would you say that dream shaped who you've become?
Well, that dream, if anything, it woke me up to reality that God has a plan for everybody. He doesn't do anything by happenstance, or there's no mistake on God's perfect plan. So I remember I used to complain to my mom about how come I was so short. I was always the smallest person in my class. And so I would come home and I said, Mama, I don't get it. I said, how come everybody's taller than me? How come everybody's bigger than me? And I said, how come I can't be tall? Because everybody wants to grow up and be big one day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember my mom told me, she says, God made you that size for a reason. I said, what, to punish me? Like that, right? He said, no. So he made you that size for a reason. I said, why? He said, because whatever he wants to do through you, you're the perfect size for that. And he says, people like you, he says, that means they're going to have to hear you. You're going to have to speak up and have a voice. And so because you're going to have to be noticed some other way other than from your size. And I didn't know that she was prophetically speaking over my life, because that's eventually what I became, was an educator, a professional speaker. And so when people see me, Jody, it's so funny when they meet me in person, you sound so much taller.
That's interesting.
And so if anything, it made me realize that it's one thing to want to be a basketball player, but I never asked the right question. God, what do you want to do through me? And how can you use me? And he's given me a person of small stature with a big presence. My son is taller than I am now. He's grown now, but he's taller than I am. He says, Daddy, I don't understand this about you. I said, what? He says, everybody I see, is they're taller than you. They're bigger than you. He said, but you seem to me so much larger than everybody else.
Wow.
And I told him, I said, Kendall, what people see is my height. I said, but you feel my presence. And that's the gift that I think I learned about that dream, about you got to go with what God gave you and use it to your best ability. And that's what I've been trying to do.
Oh, I love that so much. I love everything about what you just said. That's so, that was really, really beautiful. And that's something that everybody needs to hear from time to time. Like, God's going to work through you, and whatever gifts you've been given or whatever challenges even you've been given, those are all part of that mission that you've been given.
Absolutely.
That's inspiring. That's so inspiring. Thank you. So now that you are a speaker and a coach and you do all these amazing, wonderful things, writing all these books, what was that pivotal moment in your life that brought you here?
Wow. I'll say the pivotal moment actually is not a good story. the way I can describe my story, I told you where I grew up in Miami, and I grew up in the hood. I didn't tell you that my mom was also a teenage mother. She had me at the age of 16. My dad left when I was 2. We grew up in abject poverty. And my story can be summarized. I went from rags to riches to ruin to redemption. And when I say that, it's not a great story, because I had it all by the age of 30, had my PhD, had written a couple of books, had my own radio show. I became the youngest professor I ever hired to teach in the state of Florida at the age of 24. I had worked for the Florida governor's office, started my first business at 22, all this before the age of 30. But I lost it all by the age of 40. And because I lost it all is what led me. That was the pivotal moment, because I thought my life was over. Because how do you go from having nothing to having everything to losing it all? And now you're thinking, I've blown it. There's no way God could ever do anything in my life, because I forfeited everything that was given to me, the grace that was given to me, the blessings that were given to me. I ruined and destroyed my family, my marriage and everything else. And I just thought, I'm done. But that pivotal moment of hitting that rock bottom was realizing that God was the rock at the bottom. And I met a man who came into my life when I was in my late 30s, my mid to late 30s. And he showed me how to be a man, because at that point I knew what it took to become a successful male, but I had failed as a man. I didn't know how to be a husband, a father, a spiritual leader in my home, how to lead a family, until I met this man who kind of took me under his wing and discipled me, mentored me, coached me. And that changed everything. And because of his influence on me, it inspired me to do my second act, which is now coaching and building and growing men and helping them write their comeback stories, or at least trying to prevent them from ever having to write one in the first place.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's incredible. As you say that, I can't express how much I really appreciate that, because I know for myself, my husband and I, we've definitely had our ups and downs in life. And it's encouraging to know that when people go through that rock bottom, you're absolutely right. God is that rock at the bottom and as that springboard forward. And that powerful message, I want to go into this now, this idea of the difference between being a male, successful male, and being a man. Okay. Right. Because on my podcast, I talk about, you know, the generally accepted, beliefs and values in our society that we just kind of glaze over. We just kind of go, oh yeah, that's just the way that it is. Right. And really, they are dysfunctional. They aren't serving us to grow and to be able to reach our full potential. And so to me, when you say, I know how to be a successful male, that sounds to me like, okay, in our dominant culture and society in general, that's good enough. Right. And the reality is it's not. And so I want to discuss now with you, what does that mean to be a man? And what is the dysfunctional belief that's keeping us stuck in saying that being a successful male is good enough?
Well, we'll start with what the dysfunctional belief.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty of it. And a lot of men are guilty of it. And a lot of our culture is guilty of it. And it doesn't sound bad, because we're shaping and molding children, at least especially boys, to this. And the dysfunction comes from what we believe a man is. We believe in society in general, in our culture, that a man is defined based on what he does, on what he does. Now, why do I say that? Because any man out there who's listening, any father out there listening to this, and maybe women don't know this about us already, but whenever we meet a stranger, another man, and let's say we're on a plane somewhere, the first question we ask is, what do you do?
Yeah.
We don't ask, who are you? We ask, what do you do? And so the dysfunctional beliefs that we have, I call it the Asians. I made this up, Jody. It's just me. I'm kind of quirky that way. But it helps me understand and be able to communicate it better to the men that I work with, and also to people who may be just listening, like these listeners right now, is that we're taught in society that a man becomes a man based on his, he's a real man if he has the right occupation. That's one of the Asians. What does he do for a living? Because man, this is, you're going to respond differently if you say I'm a surgeon or I'm a sanitation worker. They're still men or they're still males, but we hold the other one in higher esteem just because of what they do. Occupation. Another dysfunctional belief is that we believe a man is defined by his compensation. Why are we holding up the surgeon in higher esteem? Because we assume, or we're probably right, that he makes more money than a sanitation worker. And so because of his bank account and the things he can buy, his compensation, we say he must be a successful man. Then if it's not occupation and compensation, we look at his level of education. Not only is he college educated, but what school did he go to? Mm-hmm. There's a difference between me going to Harvard and going to University of Western Kentucky. You know, we're not going to see it the same way, even though that shouldn't define who that man is. Another dysfunctional belief is reputation. Mm-hmm. How many Twitter followers does he have? How many likes does he get on his social media page? Now, let's look at also in society, how many women are attracted to him, his reputation? How many people is he connected to that he has influence over? Do you know him? How many people know who he is? So we define it by reputation. Another dysfunctional belief is intimidation. Mm-hmm. Intimidation. How strong? Remember, I want to be big. I want to be tall. I want to be strong because I want to be able to provoke and invoke fear in someone else. Doesn't mean I'm going to hurt him. But the fact that I can evoke fear tells you that I must be a strong man, strongest, the fastest, whatever. Intimidation. How can I get you to fear me? And so in itself, it doesn't seem that bad and dysfunctional. But what if you achieve all those things, but we never mention, what did that have to do with you being a good husband, a good father,
right,
a good leader? And so those are the dysfunctional beliefs. So here's the question that we begged to ask. And then if that's not what a man is in society, then what is a real man? Well, I don't feel like I'm the expert in defining what manhood is. All I decided to do, and I'm sure a lot of people out there may agree with me on this, that you look to who you respect and admire most as a man. Now, for me personally, it's Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Because even if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, nobody's going around saying he was a horrible man. You know what I mean? Right. Yeah. That we need to do something with him. You know, even his enemies respected him. And so to me, he's the model of what a real man is. And so I said, let's start with then looking at his life. Now, not how do I define manhood? What do I see in manhood in him?
Yeah.
And what I noticed about Jesus was simply four things. It wasn't the Asians.
Wait. Before you go on, let's review those Asians real quick. Because, you know, so occupation.
Okay. Education.
Reputation and intimidation.
And I think most people would agree with me on that.
Yeah.
Because we can name any person in society. If we went to Tom Brady, you know, he just won the Super Bowl. You know, we would go, man, look at his occupation. He's the football player, right?
He's what
all-time winning football. Right? Yeah, right. Compensate. We know he's making a lot of money, right? Education. He went to the University of Michigan. Okay, a lot of people say go blue. You know, they're real big on it. He's college educated. Reputation. Whoa, have you seen his wife? Are you following his reputation? And intimidation. He intimidates his opponents. They fear him. So we would say Tom Brady is a real man. I wouldn't say that because I'm not married to him.
Right.
I would like to ask his wife. I would need to talk to his children to find out if he's a real man, but I can't base it on just his occupation, compensation, education, reputation, intimidation. So that's why I look below the surface. I said, okay, so let me look at who I know a little bit more about. And that's Jesus Christ as a man who I respect and admire. And it's not that complicated, but yet it's hard for us to execute. What did Jesus do? A real man leads his family spiritually. Now, I know some people say, well, Jesus didn't have a family. Jesus was single. No, but he led. Your family is not just the people who come from your blood.
Right.
These are your friends, the people who you have the biggest influence on. He led them. He wasn't following them. He was leading them. He led them spiritually. In addition to his own family, his mom, his dad, his brothers, his cousins, and everybody else. He leads his family spiritually. In other words, he rejects passivity. He's not going to just let life happen. He's going to step out. Love goes first. All right. And so that he leads his family spiritually. That's what a real man is. A real man also loves and serves others sacrificially. Jesus served sacrificially by pouring out himself for other people. He had a heart and he had compassion for the lost, for the lame, for the people who were oppressed. And most, that's not what we paint in society as a man who has a lot of compassion, but he had a lot of compassion. And guess what I noticed? That women are attracted to that, to compassion and kindness and gentleness. He was a gentle man. He loved and served others sacrificially. Another thing that Jesus did, and what I think a real man is, he leaves an eternal legacy of faith for his family. And what I mean by leave an eternal legacy, he's not a situational man. He's a generational man. Because you know that you're leaving a legacy when people talk about you after you're gone. What are they asking Tom Brady right now? What is his legacy going to be? But guess what they're going to be talking about? Guess what legacy they're going to be talking about? His football legacy.
Yeah.
I don't want you to talk about my podcasting legacy. I want you to talk about the impact I made on my family and the people, my friends around me, on helping inspire them to be better, live their lives better and sacrificially in serving other people. And so a real man leaves an eternal legacy. And we as men, we got to ask ourselves, if we died tonight, what would be our legacy? If our life expired at the midnight tonight, what would they say about us at our funeral? What would they put in our obituary? What would we be known for? What would we be remembered for? That is your legacy. And last but certainly not least, Jody, I say a real man looking at Jesus' life, and this is where I think the reason why we struggle as men, Jesus did it successfully and he asked us to do it and we didn't, we're not doing it effectively. A real man teaches other men how to do the same.
Wow.
Lead his family spiritually, love and serve others sacrificially, and leaves an eternal legacy. How do we know that Jesus told us to do that? Because the last words he said to the men he was leading was, go make disciples of all the nations. Teach them to observe everything you've seen in me. Teach them to do the same. That's why we are struggling as men, because someone didn't teach us how to do the same thing by leading us spiritually, showing us how to love and serve sacrificially, showing us how to leave an eternal legacy, and then saying, this is how you teach others how to do the same.
Yeah. Okay. So, because in your backstory, you talked about how you met somebody who became your mentor,
right?
And he helped you and guided you. So now I kind of want to address, like, how are men getting stuck in this mindset, in the dysfunctional mindset, and these Asians, you know, that are keeping them there. And I think that one of the key points you're bringing up is heroes, mentors. Who are they looking to for guidance and direction? So, and you know, obviously going to Jesus is definitely, he's perfect, right? We want to be like
the perfect man.
He is the perfect man, the perfect example. But how can we help more men recognize that the heroes that they are looking to, the mentors they're looking to, aren't modeling the right kind of manhood behaviors and attitudes that they should be?
Right. You know, my thing is, and I have a non-traditional approach to things, but I'll give you a simple, this is a lot of different ways, but I'll give you an example, at least maybe a couple examples, may come up with three of them, but some simple examples that people are like, that guy is crazy. No, but women would tell me this makes sense. I'll give you an example when it comes to men in my life, who I want in my life. And most men will think I'm crazy for saying this, but you'll get it, Jody, as a woman. The men in my life, if my wife wouldn't consider marrying them, I don't hang around them.
Interesting.
Okay. now think about that for just a second. If my wife doesn't respect the kind of man that they are, why am I hanging around them? Why am I allowing them to influence me?
Yeah.
You know, it's not that she hates him, but she has to see qualities in him that says, wow, I want my husband to have those type of qualities. I want her to see the qualities of a father in a man and say, wow, that's the kind of qualities I want my husband to have as a father for our children. And so that's one way of looking, just in a practical way, is that we got to ask ourselves, it's one thing to see LeBron James on television or Tom Brady. I don't know what kind of husbands or fathers they are. So my wife couldn't come in and tell you, said, oh, as rich as he is, as great as he is, be that kind of husband. She doesn't know.
Yeah.
But from the men she see around in our community, in our church, on my job, or whatever I do, or wherever I'm congregating. And she says, wow. And it's funny because my wife, she enjoys my friends because she says, that's the kind of men I wouldn't like to see my husband hang around. But here's another practical thing. Now, forget about, let's say you're single, you're not married. You said, I don't know what kind of man should I be looking to. And I teach, when I worked in education, I taught this to our kids when it comes to picking their friends. Mm-hmm. Something very simple. So ask yourself this question. If I died tonight, would I trust them raising my children? Simple as that. Wow. Now, and I'm talking to, I talk to little kids that I'm like, these kids don't even have children. I said, if you had a child, think about your best friend in school. I'll ask kids, middle school kids, I'll tell them this all the time. I say, think about your best friend. Yeah, that's my best friend. I said, think about if you had a child, if you died tonight, would you trust your friend raising your children, your baby? And it's funny that even little kids would say this. I wouldn't trust him raising my puppy. What are you talking about raising my kid? So my question is, if you wouldn't trust him with your puppy, why are you trusting with your life?
Yeah.
And so to us as adults, we can learn from the same experience. The people I'm hanging around, if I died, I have a son and I have a daughter, 24-year-old son. I have an 18-year-old daughter. And the men I hang around, Jody, who I choose intentionally to hang around, are men that if I left this earth tomorrow, pour into my son's life. I want you to be there at my daughter's wedding. I want them, and I can tell my kids, look to these men as examples of what a man is.
Yeah.
And so that to me, those are just practical things that we got to start using discernment and wisdom to say, who am I hanging around? Yeah. Are these the people I like? Because you're going to become who you hang around.
Yeah, there's that saying, right? You are the five people you spend the most time
with. So you're going to become, by default, you're going to become what they are if you hang around them long enough.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to be careful of who you associate with. Not that you're trying to avoid everybody, but not everybody is worthy of your time.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to know about somebody, but nothing to spend quality time with that person and allowing them. Because I love this. I forgot who said this saying. They said, either when you're around a person, either you're influencing them or they're infecting you.
Yeah.
Make sure you're on the right side of that influence. Okay, that relationship.
So that's something that brings up a point, because I think sometimes people go, well, I want to influence other people.
Right.
I want to be around people that I can influence. Is that a worthy enough reason to bring those people into your life?
No, as far as I guess seeking people who just because you want to influence, I don't think you should see people just because you want to influence them. I think you need to be more of who you are so you attract the right people to you.
Yeah.
I know that, like, Jody, you and I are people of influence. We have a platform, that kind of thing. I don't know about you, but I'm not intentionally going out to influence people. I'm just being more of who I'm letting my light shine.
Yeah.
And I'm just being more of who I am. And hopefully I'll attract the right people, because I'm not attracting everybody. There's some people like, I don't like this dude. I can't stand him. But I'm not trying to attract you. I'm trying to attract people like-minded like me who have the kind of heart that I have. And so no different than what we tell our children. They say, how can I make more friends? Be the kind of friend you want to attract.
Yeah.
Simple as that. So I don't think the goal should be that you're going to out influence. But when you get into that relationship, you are going to be influencing them, or they're going to be influencing you, or you're going to be infecting them, or they're going to be infecting you. Just make sure you're on the right side of that relationship. That's all.
Yeah. Oh man, that's so awesome. I really appreciate this whole message, because, you know, there's when I think about my husband and how he's struggled with, we fall into that category where we checked off all the right boxes, and he graduated college around the time of the recession. And so it was just, he hit the wall hard. And, you know, but when I talk to him, I tell him, you know what? I don't care about that stuff, because, you know, when I met him and we were dating, getting married, and my advice that was given to me was that the man that I marry would be, help me to realize a life of nobility. And, and now as I'm like, wait, but he doesn't have the occupation or the, you know, the, all those
Asians, education,
right?
And reputation.
He's a good man. And I looked up the definition of noble lately, and it said that it's of higher, like a higher moral character, or, you know, somebody who has a strong character and is elevated in their character, in their spiritual and personal, you know, identity. And that is the kind of man that my husband is. He brings nobility into our family because he has a higher commitment of nobility. And that to me, it's like, but as a wife, I go, dude, you are noble. I have to encourage him and remind him. And because that dysfunction that you're talking about, those Asians, they are so detrimental to a man's psyche.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And that's the part about, I'm just trying to be real and raw with you and my audience and mm-hmm. that's our situation. But I love that we're having this conversation because that is our reality. Like mm-hmm. with my family is that, we are trying to model for our kids the fact that what a good man, what a good person looks like, isn't necessarily what society is defining.
What society, absolutely. And Jody,
and the thing, more you lean into that, the more actually destructive it's going to be for your life.
Yeah. And Jody, the thing is, because I love the fact, and I think this is a great message for the women out there to encourage your spouse, your husband in that. And because society is telling us different, Jody. I'm talking about as men.
Yeah.
You know, they're telling us that noble is not enough. Being honorable is not enough. Being humble is not enough. Being compassionate is not enough. We have to check off the boxes. And even my son, I was just talking to him yesterday and he was saying, and I was telling him, I said, character over everything, because imagine me having so much success by the age of 30. What do you think the pressure is put on him to think, in order for me to get dad's approval, I have to achieve twice as much as he did? I'm like, no,
yeah.
No, you don't. I say character over credentials every time, every day, ending in Y. Character over credentials. I want you to raise the bar as a man that so to the point that your life demands an explanation, whether you had a surgical mask on in an operating room or you're pushing a broom. Your life should demand an explanation based on your character, not your bank account.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for being here and sharing that with my audience, because this is exactly what I'm working towards, is helping families to redefine their family yes. culture based on the values that they want
yes.
to implement into your family. Because we have family culture, whether by design or by default. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, most of us fall into the default category where we just repeat the same patterns that we saw our parents, or repeat the same patterns in society. And we have to intentionally stand up to that and say, no, I want something better. I want to be able to know that we are going to thrive regardless of the external rewards that anybody is trying to tell us are quote unquote success. Because there are too many people out in this world that are successful and their lives are a mess.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but that's the reality that we're facing.
You know, it's funny now, I look back at my life now and I'm making probably if not a half, probably a quarter of what I used to make when I was younger. But yet I'm more at peace and have more joy and contentment and satisfaction than I ever did before. And I'm not saying that even money is bad.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't define who you are. And so you're right. Either we're going to define the culture we want to create, or you're going to end up acquiescing to the culture that is already surrounding you. And when I told my family, we don't follow culture.
Yeah.
That's not our job. We don't follow culture. We create a culture, but we don't follow culture.
Yeah. Well, because the more you measure your life by that, the more disgruntled you'll be. I mean, it's disheartening that that's the reality for so many people. And that was another thing I was going to say about it, is that I think that the more you recognize your character and the strengths that you are as an individual, then the more real successful you'll be.
Yes.
You know, if you let go of those external drivers and external rewards and you focus on the internal and personal development, then that's really where you're going to start seeing some real success, would you say?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So in conclusion, thank you so much, Dr. Martin. This is great conversation. I really, really appreciate being able to talk about these things with you and talk about something so personal to my heart. I love my husband so dearly, and I know he's going to listen to this and be mad at me that I brought up. But I'm just
don't be mad at her. Look. No, I think it's awesome, Jody. I think it's awesome. And we need, my wife is, I tell her, you're my teammate. You're my teammate, and you need a strong teammate. And my wife is like you, Jody. She's an encourager. And I mean, she's just very encouraging. I'm like, maybe I don't need that much encouragement. You know what I mean? I'm all right. But she loves encouraging. But I know a lot of men need that. And we do need it because society is in our ear on this side. Yep. Because, you know, what I love about you is you guys as women is that, especially women with your kind of heart, it doesn't matter what we do. You guys are going to support us. You know, you're going to have our back and everything. And I always joke. I said, my wife, if we were homeless, my wife said, oh, baby, it's OK. You know, it'd be my turn to hold a sign. Then you get it right now. And you guys are OK with that. But we're not as men.
Right.
Because when they see that homeless couple on the road, even though my wife is still looking at me with those soft eyes, I love him. And we're going to do this together. We're going to go through this together. Guess what society is seeing when they see that homeless couple? Why isn't that? How come that man doesn't have a job?
Yeah.
How come he's not provided for his family? They're not looking at the woman saying she's not this, she's not that. They're saying that poor woman, what kind of man does she have? Even though you are our biggest cheerleaders and we have to deal with that in society. So I had to tell my wife that. She said, I don't care how much money you make. I don't care what you do. I said, yeah, you don't. But we have society coming down. So to have a woman who will support you in that, you can't put a price tag on it. I think it's awesome. I think it's incredible. I love it. I love that you have that heart for your husband.
And it makes me want to speak to women who don't and be like, yeah, look, he's got a lot that he's on his plate. He's got all he's dealing with. You know, yeah. It just breaks my heart when I know that men deal with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And the complication in that in society is, well, he's a white middle-class man, so he shouldn't have anything.
What problem does he have?
or things, you know, but it's like, hey, guess what? Everybody has their cross to bear. And I mean, and I can't, I'm not trying to say that one is more heavy than anybody else. I just think that
Jody, you know, that's interesting you say that. And I've never been, you know, I've never talked about this on any other podcast before, but now that you say that, something just jumped up in my spirit. We support a lot of men. I'm talking about a lot of men through coaching, community, connection, counseling, and helping them grow as men. You know, you mentioned about man, you know, man builder. That was a term I gave myself. It doesn't really exist, you know, but we build men. But, you know, you just brought up something I never thought about. We have probably the most diverse community. I'm telling you, we have every ethnic group you can ever imagine, every denomination. If they didn't see my face, they wouldn't even know if this is a ministry run by a person of color. And you just made me think of something. All the men who come to us, we have a lot of men in our community. Do you know not one person who is looking for help said, no, the problem that I'm struggling with is being a certain race.
Right.
That they have not one man has come to us saying, that's my biggest hang up. I'm a white man or I'm a black guy. I'm a Latino. Me being an Asian man in America is really, I'm not saying the problem doesn't exist, but you just made me think about that. Not one person in the years of our ministry has ever said, I need help because it is hard being a black man. Right. It is hard being a white guy. It's hard being an Italian guy, a Canadian. No one has ever said that. It's all because they want to become a better man, better husband, a better father, a better spiritual leader for their home. And they say, you know what? I'm suffering from a learning disability that's been undiagnosed called ABT, ain't been taught. Will you teach me? I say, well, we're going to teach you together because we're going to do it in community.
That's awesome. Thank you for clarifying that. Cause I just, I know that that's kind of a hot topic and with race and everything.
Yeah. Right now it's going on, but I'm telling you the data proves it, at least in our ministry today, not one person has ever said that's their biggest issue. Yeah. Not one, Jody. I just thought about that thing you brought up. Not one person has ever brought that up as an issue.
That's powerful.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So in conclusion, finish the sentence. Mm-hmm. If I were 10 times more courageous than I am, I would link?
Wow. I would tell people, more people, about the love of Christ and who they are in Christ. I wish I was that bold now to do that. I will, if I had unlimited courage, 10 times more courage, I would do it with every breath in my body just to tell, man, he loves you so much. And you are so much more than what you're settling for. You're not what you do. You're who God says you are. I would tell more people about that.
That's beautiful. Thank you. That's beautiful. And, you know, how would that answer inspire? I guess that's kind of it. It answered itself. How would that inspire others in your life? Close your eyes for a moment. Imagine, this is from a book that I read and somebody I've interviewed. Mm-hmm. Close your eyes for a moment. Imagine you're living 30 years from now. You're sitting with your children and grandchildren, telling them the story of what you are about to do in the coming days or months. What is the inspiring story that you are going to tell them?
I would tell them what my life was like before Christ. And then I would tell them what my life was after Christ and how I became a new creation in Christ, and that my greatest desire would be for them to know him for themselves, mm-hmm. because it's not a group trip. It's a personal journey that you have to take. My story would consist of, I don't know how long that story would take to tell them, but I'll tell them what it was like before, after, and when I was in him. And I'll say, and I would, that my biggest desire is for them to know him for themselves.
That's awesome. And that's beautiful that you have that clarity to know that that's, you know, the legacy that we leave starts today. It's the day-to-day practice and the beliefs that we practice that leave that and build that legacy. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Martin. I really, really enjoyed having you. And just tell us now, what is next for you? What's coming up? What's the next project you're working on?
No, what we're doing is we're still casting the net. We're trying to reach out to men because we're probably in 136 countries with our podcast. But we're trying to reach out and cast a net to get men to let them know that you're not alone. You don't have to do life alone. I don't care how long you think you've been stuck, but a lot of us didn't come from great homes where we had a mentor or a coach or someone to show us how to spiritually lead our families to be better husbands, better fathers. But we've built a community of men to help you do that. And so what I would like to see is just to reach more men out there to say, hey, come join us. Let's come do life with us. We have a large family. It looks like heaven. You see us, it looks like heaven. It doesn't look like church on some given Sunday. It looks like heaven. And come do life with us because we want to do life with you. You don't have to do life alone.
Where can we find you and connect with you?
I would say the best way, they can go to our website at realmenconnect.com. But there's a great gift that I would like to give to them, Jody, if I could. It's called The 5 Critical Things That Every Man Needs to Know to Become the Hero of His Home. And it's a free video that we put together that talks about the 5 things, not just about what Jesus was a man, but how Jesus actually walked this out in real life. But through that video, they will learn these, they will look at themselves in a different way and say, wow, I need those kind of, now I see why I need those 5 things in my life. And so when they see that video, that's going to help them out so much that they can at least know where they can start building and what they need to start from his step one. Here's what you need to do. And if they need help, they can always reach out to us and we come alongside them and do that with them. But to go to that, all they got to do is go to rmcfree.com. RMCfree, Real Men Connect, rmcfree.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Martin. I really enjoyed this conversation and I really appreciate your work. And I acknowledge that you for it, that you've overcome obstacles. You're helping men in this world overcome the dysfunctional beliefs that are keeping them so high strung out on fear. Really, that's really the reality. So thank you for inspiring them to be real men.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jody. Anytime.
Glad you were able to tune in for this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Don't miss the next episode with Tracy Bierman, where we talk about how to get away from this idea of busyness being a badge of honor. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Culture Movement.
Please download this episode, subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. Take a screenshot and tag me in a post about your experience with any questions you'd like me to answer on the show for a mention on the podcast. For more tools for shaping your intentional family culture, be sure to sign up for your free membership of the Family Leadership Toolbox at homeandfamilyculture.com. Until next time, remember, Mother Teresa once said, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.